Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Borzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Nick Arthur from Callaway Golf.
Before we begin today, we're going to take a minute to tease Jason about the U.S. women beating the Canadian women in overtime at the Olympics. Suck it. Yeah. I didn't watch any of it because, you know, I was teaching, but I don't even know if you watched it, but hey, what the heck?
I watched as much as I could, but yeah, I mean, you guys, a couple more humans in your country. I hope you'd be able to beat us.
Yeah, it's your sport. They did have to score a tying goal with the goalie pulled. So, you know, anyway, Nick is here to talk about putter fittings. Okay, I have some experience with Adele putter fittings. I've done that. I did that 15 years ago to about 5 or 4 years ago. So what's the first step, Nick, in a putter fitting?
I think everyone's got their own different process. I think for me, before I start doing the deep dive into all the measurements and the technical stuff, I usually just want to ask some basic questions, usually a little bit of an origin story of what that player has used well in the past, what they haven't liked in the past. You kind of want to get your head around subjectively what they like, because to me the number one rule is if they don't like the look and feel of it, it's probably not going to stay in the bag very long. Even if you find that it's a good technical solution, they don't have to have many bad putting days before it goes in the trunk of the car and they pull something else out. So I usually want to talk to someone, like if I take a player into my putter bag, I'll look, let's do this, let's find a few models that if you had to go to the first tee in 10 minutes you could take these putters and go play golf with them right now. They look good, they set up good, they feel good, and let's come up with a certain amount of candidates. Maybe it's 3 or 4 different types. And once we have at least some candidates that you could play golf with, subjectively, you like the way they look, like the way they feel, sound, etc., then let's start, you know, taking some measurements to see if we can get those putters to function properly. You know, whether you're talking about the way you set up the loft or the lie or the length or the weight or all these different things that you can change about a putter, let's make sure we've got a good baseline of a putter that you generally feel comfortable with to begin with, and let's just try to make it a little bit better from there.
Okay,
that's really cool. The past couple months I got fit for a putter, and it was bang on, just like that. It was, hey, which ones do you like looking at, you know, what have you played in the past? And then we started with 4, and then from there, just like you said, we went into like, what do we need to adjust? The one that maybe didn't hit, roll it as well, but then, you know, you like the best look of that.
How often do you find that someone can fit into a putter that they like to look at initially? Because I've found in the past, sometimes people fit best into, because they can aim best, a putter that they don't initially like the look of. And then they, as they hole more putts, they start to like the look of it more. But initially, they didn't necessarily pick it off the rack.
Yeah, I think that's an important way to look at it, because a putter that you're not totally in love with at first sight can become more interesting as you start to see good results from it. So if you see good performance and there's reasons for that, like there's solid reasons for performance other than them just making a few good strokes in a row, then someone can start to like a putter better. But I'd rather have a baseline where there's just a better chance that they're going to like it. Than me just arbitrarily picking one off the wall and trying to see if they line it up better, and then hopefully it works out better, just because there's so many different choices now. But you're right, if we came up with 4 or 5 that looked reasonable and their least favorite performed best, we would probably be doing some things to try to convince the player that maybe this is the best idea. But one of the issues with putter fitting, which is like, if you're going to be a putter fitter, I think you have to understand, like when I'm training people to fit putters and talk about putting, the thing you have to understand is that the putter fitting itself, the relationship between the golfer and the putter, is fundamentally different than their relationship with a driver. Because if I go out and fit a driver on the range, it's essentially a math equation. In other words, if the player needs 9.8 degrees of actual loft with a certain shaft with a face 2.5 degrees open and this type of lie angle, it's not that they're going to go out to a tour event and just grab another driver out of the bag with totally different specs and produce good ball flight. It's just physically not going to happen. Whereas I can spend 3 hours, you know, fitting a guy for a putter that I think is spot on perfect, and next week at the tour event, he can walk up to the demo bag and grab one and make a few putts and go out and play well with it. And it might not be the same specs that I fit him for, because he's just rolling the ball across the grass. He's not trying to flight the ball through the air at 180 miles an hour with the right aerodynamics. He's rolling the ball across the grass. So the relationship that someone has with a putter is not as much constrained by that math equation. And so I'm trying to respect those subjectivities before I start trying to make it function properly. But point taken, if I find a putter that he wasn't in love with at the beginning, he or she wasn't in love with at the beginning, and we find we get really good numbers with it, when they start to see the data come up and I'm convincing that it's a better performer, then you can help someone, you know, warm up to a different option.
What would you say is the most important thing that a player needs to get right when they come in for a putter fitting?
Face angled impact. I mean, everything else kind of pales in comparison to that one number. You can essentially, of all the numbers we look at with the different measurement systems we have, you can get a lot of stuff wrong. And if you get the face angled impact right, you can still make putts. Whereas if you get that number off just a little bit, you can do everything else literally perfect and you won't make any putts. Or you'll make a very, unless you, you know, read it wrong or something. So face angle at impact is by far the most important thing. And then, and this is an important question because what ends up happening, again, when you're starting to look at data and when I'm trying to help people understand whether it's Quintic or Sam and they're looking up and they're seeing all these numbers, there's a hierarchy of importance. And the temptation with a new fitter that's just learning about the equipment is to start playing whack-a-mole where they do something to make one number look prettier, but another number gets worse. And each session they'll fix 10 numbers in a row doing certain things. But at the end of the day or the end of the session, they've accidentally made a really important number worse and they've made five other less important categories better. And the player is going to putt worse, but they feel like they've done a lot of work. They feel like they've made a lot of progress, but they've kind of taken their eye off the ball because their sense of hierarchy of those numbers is not correct. And so you always have to refer back to those important things, the kind of the pyramid of importance, and make sure that the most important things are always in a good place when you change some of the other variables. So face angle and impact, and then the next one would be hit location on the face and whether that hit location on the face matches well with their face angle. So when I get, any players, any good player, but tour players especially, no one comes in there and puts zeros all over the board. Like there's always small errors for all these players. But the difference between people that functionally, mechanically do well, forgetting whether they can read a green and all this other stuff, but just people that can functionally roll the ball well with their equipment and their technique, their errors are small and consistent, and their errors are what we would call compensating errors, meaning that it's really common to see a guy hit it slightly on the toe with a closed face. Like that's a really common thing, and those things tend to have a canceling factor. What you're not going to see is a guy come in and leave the face a degree open and also hit it on the toe, right? He wouldn't be on tour. I mean, he'd be driving an ice cream truck, right? He's not going to be playing golf for a living. So it's that hierarchy of those two variables, whether they match each other, and then everything kind of builds up into those two important numbers. And there's other little sexy things you could talk about that can improve the performance. But if you get those things wrong, you're toast. It's not going to function properly.
So how much of a putter fitting, though, is aim at static aim at address? Because I've always seen, you hear a tour player that maybe they've been pulling their putts, but they don't necessarily know that, but whatever, they've developed some kind of stroke compensation or something like that. And so they've been pulling their putts with their putter. They grab a putter off the rack somewhere, not literally, but out of the tour van somewhere, and they aim it right a little bit. So their same old stroke kind of works for that moment. But then as their stroke changes again a little bit and they stop pulling them so much, then that putter falls out of favor. Then they go back to a putter that they aim kind of straight or a little to the left. How much does the aim of the putter, how much do you try to fit toward neutral? I mean, Tiger famously aimed 3 degrees right and pulled every putt basically onto his target line.
Yeah.
Fairly consistently. Lauren Roberts, a lot of good putters don't aim. They return the face to a different place than where they aim. But how much do you fit for aim and how much are you looking for your players to return the face to where they aimed it?
So really good question. I'm glad you asked that question because I might have forgotten to mention it. A really interesting phenomenon that takes place. And again, the better the player, the more this is true. What we would call that is you have your address alignment, and you have your impact alignment, and whatever the difference is what I call a differential. And that is extremely consistent for most of my players. So let's say someone comes in and aims 0.8 to the left, but they end up 0.5 to the right. So they're what? 1.3 differential. You can find other putters where they aim them slightly different, whether it's side alignment cues, hosel configuration, the way it soles, yep. You know, the shape of the bottom of the putter will sit differently. And if they don't hover it on the leading edge, it aims a different way. Mm-hmm. But no matter what they do, that 1.3 differential between address alignment and impact alignment is very consistent. So if someone is aiming, let's make it easy to figure out. If someone's aiming a degree left and they come in to zero at impact, so they have a 1 degree differential, one of the worst things I could do that day was to find a putter they aim zero. They're going to walk out worse because the differential is really locked into the DNA of their entire technique. Where they start the putter and where they return it is, that's the entire stroke is influencing how that happens and how that differential appears. And I respect that differential. Now, if someone's got an absurdly big differential, it's not likely they're great putters. Like if they've got a 2 or 3 differential, because that's what you see with the amateurs. They'll aim 3 degrees left and be a degree right at impact. I mean, a gargantuan gargantuan differential, then I'm going to tell someone, hey, you know, you might want to talk to an instructor about this. You might want to go see your local PGA golf professional to shrink this differential down, because right now it's so far apart that I need to find a putter that you aim into the corner of the room to get a good impact. And it's probably when your differential is that big, you're essentially juggling chainsaws. Like, there's so many variables happening and you're trying to do such a fancy timing game that you probably can't do it very well. But with pros that have small, consistent differentials, I respect that differential and I fit the address alignment to match in that differential to give them a good impact alignment. The interesting thing to me is when I've gone out to tour events, like a lot of these guys love pulling out their little plates, and the plate is set up, most of these kind of hit through the gate type plates.
For zero, right?
Right. You sit it down, they got the line there. So you sit it down, square at address, and then you have to be in the same spot at impact to get to go through the gates. And my opinion would have been, well, look, if you want to make your differential zero, then go work on it for a few weeks and then use the plate. But don't, you're going to play golf tomorrow and you have a 1 degree differential. Why are you confusing yourself right now, spending 3 hours on the practice green, setting up at zero, trying to return it to zero, when you're going to go out on the golf course and have a 1 degree differential? Like, you're just confusing yourself because you're not going to fix it in one day. So what I would say, if you had a plate, maybe you should have a dot where you put the ball, and maybe you should have a gate, but you shouldn't have anything that gives you any reference for address alignment, because you might as well keep your differential for this week and then give yourself a time to change it the following week, just so you can work on start line, right? So you can point the gate where you want. Like, if the putt breaks 4 inches, you point the gate 4 inches right of the hole, and you let yourself line up however you're going to line up to get it through the gate, so you can work on start line. But you don't like retrain and try to get rid of your differential during the pro-am, because you're playing a tour event the next day. So the differential is really, really, it's impactful and it's really consistent, and it's hard to change that thing because it's part of your entire stroke dynamics.
How much of a fitting changes, how much of the alignment changes do you see? You said that the differential is very consistent,
yeah.
But does that stay very consistent on left-to-right putts and right-to-left putts? And do you do that toward the end of the putter fitting when you feel like you've got pretty close?
Yeah, I would say, I haven't done an in-depth study of this. I would say, obviously, I'm looking at very benign, clinical. I have a very flat, straight, I think it's about 14 and a half feet. So that's where I'm doing a lot of when I'm just measuring for numbers, that's where I'm doing most of my stuff. When we go out on the green and start hitting breaking putts, the phenomenon that players are always going to, even tour players are going to typically underread slightly and then overalign slightly and then push it up the slope slightly for a right to lefter, like maybe 5%, whereas an amateur is going to do it 60%, pro is going to do it 5%, and then they're going to go the other way on a left to righter. So you have that kind of thing happening, but that differential is going to survive pretty well, even when you're looking at the different conditions like that, because they just have a sense of where the putter is going to start versus where it's going to come back to impact. And that's usually part of their stroke DNA. That's just not going to change very much unless they can change it. Right. But if you get good feedback, yeah, and you go and you decide, I'm going to change it, where you get the plate or you get something that tells you where your address and impact alignment is and you make it zero, you can go spend a couple weeks trying to make it zero and you can change it. If you haven't changed it yet, then you need to respect it for as long as it's there. And that's going to be the case with me fitting a putter that day for that guy.
Yeah, that sounds good. Smart. If amateurs come in and they're coming for a fitting, should they inform their fitter of like the speeds of the greens if they even know them? Does that come into play a lot with the proper fitting?
Yeah. So then we're starting to talk about a couple things: the speed the ball's leaving the face, and then dynamically what's happening with the vertical stuff like the launch and spin. And to me, I'm going to miss on one side of the equation. And in terms of, let's say you're looking at the ball's going to launch a certain height and it's going to take off at a certain launch angle, it's going to have a certain amount of spin. Good players usually, I can put backspin on it, but I have a lot of good players that are going to put kind of a neutral skid or put some amount of topspin on it. And that to me is going to relate a little bit to how much static drag the ball has coming off the face. So let's say that someone comes in and goes, well, I think I'm supposed to be trying to put more topspin on it, right? I go, I don't know. What's your speed like at the hole? If you're a little bit too aggressive at the hole, I probably don't want it to put more topspin on it because it's going to release into true roll with a little bit more speed because it has less drag. So probably not. If you're at 10 RPMs of topspin, we probably want to leave it alone. If you've got 80 RPMs of topspin and you're really aggressive at the hole, we probably don't want that much. But the real critical thing as far as the launch angle as it moves into a certain spin is the cardinal sin is to have a guy not launching it high enough, right? So the ball's sitting down some amount. On a good green, it's going to be sitting down less. On a bad green, Poana, Bermuda, whatever it is, didn't mow the greens, the ball's got a little, it's sitting down on the grass a little deeper. So the idea would be to at least to give every player a functional launch angle, which to me, like if you look at the Quintec numbers, it'll say between 1 and 2 degrees. They're assuming a green that's pretty nice. I like my players walking out about 2 degrees. That's a nice, safe place. It's not going to hurt someone to overlift the ball slightly, but it will hurt someone to like drive the ball down into the grass, just because that's when some weird stuff's happening. Because then you've got the ball kind of being squeezed between the face of the putter and the grass, and it's kind of what you're doing and what the ground's doing back at the ball. So you can get some weird stuff happening there. You kind of want it to be whatever happens to the ball was your fault, right? So if you can give it enough lift, then you can look at the ball and go, that was me. It wasn't me, and the ground and negative launch angle and weird stuff that's a little bit less predictable to figure out.
Yeah, so I have a multi-part one here. I assume roughly 1 to 2 degrees of loft and a rise angle of 2, 3, maybe 4 degrees or so, generally speaking, from your better putters. You'd like to see that.
That's the range. Yeah, I would say okay. That. Yeah, yes. Keep where you.
Yeah, and so you can obviously, if someone's hitting down a little too much, they probably have a little bit too little loft and stuff like that. You can change that with ball position a little bit here and there in a putter fitting. I'm sure you can do that. What I found interesting was a lot of players deliver different club conditions, different launch conditions, you know, different impact alignments, depending on the alignment aids and markings and the hosel and all that stuff of the putter itself. Uh-huh. How much loft they could see on the face would change where they not only align the putter, but how much they returned, how much loft they returned to the ball at impact.
Yes.
You find the same kinds of things?
For sure. Especially because we're an insert putter company, and sometimes I have an insert which throws a lot of contrast on the face, and sometimes I have an insert that's blacked out where there's no contrast, and I get players that come in and go, well, I like to forward press until I can't see the white on the insert, and then you give them a little too much loft and they put the handle too far forward and that changes their angle of attack. So for sure, hosel configuration, the way the guy would set up, the way he'd lean the shaft with a slant versus a double bend versus a crank neck, that changes everything. One thing that's really important that I try to stay humble about this when I'm working with players is it's really easy when you've worked with a lot of players and looked at a lot of numbers to sound like Einstein when you start to explain the numbers, but it's actually much better and you're doing them much better service. Instead of making predictions, they'll say, what if we do this? What do you think is going to happen? What do you think I need? I go, well, let's do this instead. Let's try one we think might work and let's see how you do with it. And then we'll know the answer. There's no reason for me to sit here and guess. In 5 minutes, we're going to watch you hit it. We're going to see how you react to the hosel or how much loft you see on the face. And then we're going to know what the answer is for you. And they're going to make adjustments as necessary. So to me, it's always put the club in the player's hand, take some measurements, see how they react to it, make some changes, and keep iterating until you find good results. But the thing you said is a real phenomenon, especially like sometimes I'll get a guy and everything looks really good, except because the insert is white, he does something weird. And then I pull one off the rack where it's a black insert and it changes and makes it all better. Now the putters are identical, but because he can't see the contrast in the white insert, he sets up in a slightly more neutral way, delivers slightly better numbers. But the thing you mentioned about hitting down, yeah, guys are de-lofted. I get some of those guys, but I've literally in 25 years of doing this, I've never seen a really good putter have a descending angle of attack.
Right.
Not like a negative angle of attack. I've seen the two guys. I saw one guy who was a pro who had the yips. He did it. And I saw one guy who used to be a really good pro who was like 78 years old and couldn't putt anymore. And he did it. No one else hits down on the putt. What's interesting though, when you look at angles of attack, is the right-hand low guys for the left versus the left-hand low guys. Left-hand low guys are definitely coming in more level because of the way their shoulders set up and the orientation of their torso with the left-hand lower on the club. So the difficulty with those guys is you'll get like a 1 degree, 1.5 degree positive angle of attack. And if the delimiter you run into there,
it's tough to launch the ball high enough.
Well, without putting backspin on it, right? So right. You would increase the loft to get the launch angle up, and guess what's coming with it? The backspin.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the issue with that guy. The right hand low guys, they can hit the topspin forehand really easy. So those guys are really easy to get rolling true pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Left hand low guys, and left hand low guys, everything else will look phenomenal. Like the delivery of the club, the face rotation, where they hit in the face, the way they square the face of impact will look phenomenal, but they'll be skidding the pee out of it. And it's like, okay, but this is, you got a like a 0.8 ascending angle of attack. We're going to have to make a compromise here. And I'm not going to make a compromise on the launch angle. So I'll usually let them skid it a little bit. Not necessarily backspin, but I won't be trying to hit like the optimum PGA Tour average topspin number. Like I'll leave them at 5 RPMs, not try to get to 30 or something like that.
Yeah, I have a comment and then a question for you.
Sure.
And the comment is to tack on to that. Like it's bizarre in the putter fittings that I did how sensitive people are to small changes in little stuff. We talked about the face insert being a different color and they set up differently and they stroke it differently and stuff like that. I had a guy, he had an answer style putter, you know, just a blade perimeter weighted putter. It was an Odyssey actually. It had a top line, just the thin top line on the top part of the, you know, the blade, which is what, 1/4 of an inch or something?
At the most, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. He aimed that putter. Now it's a laser, so it's traveling twice the distance. So 8 feet away, 16 feet. He aimed aimed it about 8 inches right of the hole every time. So whatever degrees that is, you know, 8 inches over there. When we changed it to a dot, he aimed about an inch right of the hole every time. When we took it away entirely, he aimed at the middle of the hole every time. And so just that dot changing from that, because it shifted where his eyes drew his attention. He used the more, when he had no alignment aid, he used more of the perpendicular leading edge of the top line or the back line of that to line the putter. When he had the little line, it threw off where he looked and where his attention was drawn, and he aimed it to the right. So
yeah. Oh, go ahead.
You see little stuff like that. You know, I love how putter companies, Callaway's guilty of it a little bit too, but it's marketing. They'll say, we've solved aiming. You know, no, you haven't. Like, everyone that fits and aims things very differently. And I think people can take that away. My last question then is about how then, once you have someone doing the right things, how much do you fit for weight? Like, not only the total weight of the putter, but where the weight is, counterweights, head weight, shaft weight, et cetera, and shaft flex for distance control.
Well, so one thing that kind of pops in my head that's a really annoying part of club fitting that I wish we would have a different way to define how heavy the head feels, just because when you use the swing weight formula, I'll be working with a bunch of LPGA players that like 32 inches of length, and you've basically got to get the head like 380, 390 grams just to get them to like a D0, right? And so the problem there is that them or their coach or their dad or whatever is like, well, she can't be putting with a putter that has a C7 swing weight. I go, you probably don't want to worry about that number too much. I can go in there and put the entire roll of lead tape on the back of this thing, or put a bunch of weights in the head, or epoxy a chunk of tungsten behind the face, and I can get the weight up to 390 grams and it will be a D2. And the problem is, it's still 390 grams at impact, right? Even though you're happier with the number, like you're happier with the swing weight number, when she swings it into the ball with a certain speed, there's still 390 grams hitting the ball. And to me, that is not going to be a good idea for helping her with speed control. So one of the elements when you start talking about head weight versus swing weight versus counterbalancing, obviously anytime you're adding a bunch of weight to the grip, or you have the putter with a dramatically different type of length than standard, then you get these swing weights bouncing around. And so I really like to not talk about swing weight very much. What I like to do is I like to experiment with different weight configurations, different amounts of total weight, different amounts of weight distribution, and try to figure out where can I find that sweet spot where they can deliver mechanically good numbers, but also feel like when they've hit the ball at a certain pace, reality is matching what they're feeling, right? So
how do you test that in a fitting?
Yeah, so it's really hard to look up at the Quintec or the SAM and get that answer. So usually when I think a putter set up to roll the ball functionally well, like, okay, I've got the launch and spin where I want it, looks like all the alignments in the face are pretty good, the player tends to like the putter, what I'll then do is I'll just go out to our putting green with some of these different options, and we'll start hitting putts. We'll just start hitting putts in the real world out on a green. And what you end up finding is that if you have three or four different candidates and they've all been set up to the right specs, she might, or he or she might have a favorite walking out there, but just based on now in the real world, rolling the ball on grass with putt breaking and trying to figure out whether the speed control is accurate or not, then a lot of times you walk away with maybe what would have been the third or fourth choice out of four putters. But there's no substitute to going out and actually watching someone hit putts, because now I'm trying to talk to the player and go, like, it's okay. You don't have to have the right technical answer. Just tell me when something feels right or doesn't feel right. Basically, when you hit the putt, before you look up, you should not be surprised if the ball feels like you should know whether you've hit it too hard or too soft. You should know whether you feel like the ball started a little left or a little right. And these are some subjective things that I'm not going to figure out. Even as fancy as my putting bay is, I'm not going to be able to figure that stuff out. So we have to go out and actually test that stuff on a real green with real grass.
Good. Do you have anything else that you want to wrap up with, Nick?
I guess maybe I would say that any putter fitters or putting coaches, when you're working with a player, I think the important thing is when someone comes in and they're complaining about something, you really want to quiz the player to try to figure out what the true origin story of the problems are. Otherwise, you just start chasing numbers around and trying different things and trying to make the numbers look a certain way or trying to make the numbers look tour average, but you're not really solving the problem. It's really common for me. This is probably happens more often with college players than tour players, but it's still a real phenomenon that they're going to take into their playing career if they're trying to play golf for a living. One particular thing that pops up in my head is kind of a story is that, and this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, and if I recall, the kid was pretty good. He was a D1 college player. I haven't heard of him since, so maybe I ruined his career, but he came in complaining of what a lot of college players complain about, what they walk in and they say, I'm a pretty good ball striker. I want to come in and try something different because I'm not making enough 15 footers, not making enough birdies. And you guys know the statistics stuff, right? So they don't know anything about that stuff. So they always thinking they're making less putts than everyone else. And that may or may not be true. That could be true, but it might not be true. But I go, well, what is it? What are the symptoms? What do you tell me when you're not making it? Is it bad speed control, alignment? And they go, I'm not really sure what it is, but I figure if I get in here and get on the machines and kind of figure it out, we can find, maybe I'm not doing what a lot of the tour guys are doing. So maybe we can find some stuff. And I go, yeah, we could definitely take some measurements. But when I did that, I looked at, and it wasn't the best stroke I'd ever seen, but it was mechanically sound. Like everything, all the numbers were at a tour level. So it's like, all right, I don't see any red flags. I said, you sure your speed control is good though? And he goes, yeah, I don't three putt a lot. I think my speed's pretty good. And I went, well, okay. And I just popped into my mind, especially that day, because we had the green outside rolling really fast. It was in the winter, but it was firm and fast. And I went, let's go try something just for fun. Let's go try a test just to see how good your speed control actually is. And if you pass it, we'll know that that's not the issue. And so we went outside, and all I did was I picked like a 6 or 7 footer straight down the hill, probably 2% grade, really fast, probably 12 on a stint meter. And I said, look, all I want you to do with this putt is just leave it short. And he goes, you mean you don't want me to make it? I go, yeah, I don't want you to get it to the hole. Just put it down there in front of the hole, but don't make it. Leave it short. He goes, so miss it. I go, yes, leave it short. Are we speaking the same language? Yes, leave it short. And the first putt he hit, like, almost moved the hole backwards. Like, it hit the back of the center and bounced up in the air and went in. And I'm like, all right, maybe he's got it now. And he goes, okay, I see what you're saying. I go, okay, let's try it again. It took him 8 putts to leave the thing short. So I told him, I go, look, I don't necessarily think your speed control is horrible, but I know that if I took a tour player out here, they would immediately look at this putt and they go, oh, you gave me a tickler. Like, I know this is one, you move it to the next dimple, it's going to trickle all the way down there. But it took him 8 putts to leave the thing short. So what it's telling me is that his speed control is not that great, and his ability to decode the topography and the speed of the green is not that great. So the 14, 15 footers he's complaining about, it's not because they're right edge or left edge that he's missing and not converting. It's because he's rolling those things 2 or 3 feet by. So his speed control is not great. So trying to identify what the actual error is so that the guy can get a higher conversion rate for that particular kid was slowing the ball down at the hole because he was shrinking the size of it because the speed was too aggressive at the hole. And I just exposed that by giving him one where it was really easy to be too fast at the hole. And it wasn't his stroke mechanics at all. So that's what I would emphasize to people, is you got to really dig deep to figure out what the actual problems are, because I could have given him just a standard fitting and he would have walked out going, oh, we did a lot of work and I've had a putter that rolls it really good. And I think I would like maybe we've fix some stuff. It's like, no, your speed control is still terrible. You're still going to putt poorly.
So you destroyed his confidence and he didn't play another college event after that. And
yeah. So what ends up happening is
he's selling insurance now.
Exactly. I taught him something really important. I traumatized him and now he's working and now he's a barista at Starbucks.
Yeah.
But they pay pretty good, actually. I mean, Starbucks pays pretty good right now. Better than missing a bunch of cuts. I'll tell you that. So I probably did him a favor.
Right. Yeah. He's not spending a bunch of money traveling around to miss cuts.
Yeah.
Where can people find anything that you want to pitch or promote?
Well, I work for Callaway Golf. Obviously, we sell Odyssey putters. So anytime people are looking for a putter, they should consider Odyssey. We do good stuff. I would say that we have a very specific philosophy. I mean, we're an insert company and our inserts are softer than a milled. We're going to continue to make milled putters, but generally our specialty is the fact that we can do interesting physics things with the insert material and the insert construction. So we do some pretty good stuff that can help high handicap players and better players. And we've got a pretty good reputation on tour in terms of winning tournaments. So they should always consider us when they're going to buy a new putter. And anything else, you know, if they need to get, I would say that when they go decide to buy an Odyssey putter, it'd be a good idea to go get fit for one. So it works well for them as well.
Quick last question. What's the difference in smash factor between your softest insert and like a milled steel face putter?
It's actually pretty significant. I mean, the softer inserts these days are coming off quite a bit slower. So which it turns out that for some players, that's awesome. And for some players, that's not great.
People don't appreciate how much an insert or the face material or whatever affects
for sure
your speed control and the speed of the ball.
For sure. And we have special tour inserts that are firmer. And the other thing I would say too is no matter whether you use an Odyssey or another type of putter, you do want to make sure, no matter what skill level you are, when you go test putters at your local retail account or pro shop or whatever it is, you do want to have an insert that feels in a way that gives you some kind of sound or resonance or feedback or click or some kind of feedback through your hands and through your ears, especially through your ears, that gives you a sense of how hard you just hit the ball. And if Odyssey putters are too soft, then you should look for a milled version of an Odyssey putter. And if you need to choose something else, choose something else, but really make sure that that insert or that sound, regardless of what the material the putter is working well for you, because that's a good feedback mechanism.
Yep. Thanks, Jason. How about us?
And remember, you can find us online at thespinaxis.com. And if you have any questions, let us know. Love to hear from you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, guys.